Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi, everybody. Guess what? It's another episode of All the Small Games, a podcast that's all about indie games, hosted by me, Andrew Levins, and for the first time in weeks, my good old friend and co-host, John Valenzuela, is here.
Hey, Levins. God damn it, it's good to be back.
Great to be back in the Zoom call that we use to record every episode of this podcast.
Indeed.
John took a couple of weeks off, for those who weren't paying attention, had a baby, a beautiful baby girl who I got to meet on the weekend.
And it was lovely, lovely for you to meet her. It was wonderful to see.
She's the perfect switch stand. I've seen you leaning the switch up against her little head while she rests on your stomach.
That's how they develop, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta get those neck muscles working.
I just want to say a very big thank you to, who do we have? We had Mr. Sunday Movies, we had Jackson Bailey and Adam Knox for stepping in and, co-hosting a couple episodes for us. It was really, really fun. If this is, your first episode, regular episode with, me and John hosting, strap in, because every week we talk about indie games, the indie games we've been playing. Most of the time they're brand new ones, and most of the time they're pretty cheap too. So if you ever want some cheap recommendations for the gaming console of your choosing, this is the perfect podcast for you to, tune into every single week. Today,
damn straight,
I got some big news. I finished two big games in the last two big small games
in
the last week. One of them took over my life, but took over my life during the time that you're away. So I don't even know if you knew I was playing this game.
Is this Blue Fire?
It is Blue Fire. Yep.
I pay attention.
Good.
I keep my eye on what's going on.
And then a brand new game came out, and I'm gonna fuck it up because it's a whole bunch of assonants. Is it Tiger Trio's Tasty Treats?
Tiger Trio's Tasty Travels.
Travels. Damn it. So close.
So close. Great. And it's alliteration.
That's right. Assonants is vowels.
Yeah. Okay. Repetition of vowel sounds.
See, we're also an English podcast.
You finished Quad T, as I've decided.
No, I have not finished Quad T. That's a brand new game. The other game I finished is one of your favorite games of 2020. It is a game that was recently ported to Switch, and I talked about it last week. It's called There Is No Game, a puzzle game. When I recorded it with Noxie, I was halfway through the final chapter. Those chapters are pretty long. You can't finish an entire chapter before you have to take your kids to school, unless you get them up earlier than they should, and that's going to be bad news for you when they get back from school. So,
true.
Yeah, Archie and I played that entire game together. It was very fun introducing him to a puzzle genre, like a puzzle game that was also so, like subversive when it comes to the way those puzzle games work. It was crammed full of more ideas than your average game, like, you know, 10 average games has. And it just...
And also, like, a little bit of a tour through kind of various different genres of game and various different concepts attached to gaming. Like, did he understand? Did he kind of get the whole, the free-to-play levels?
Yeah, well, because...
And get why that was funny?
I think kids would understand that more than us, because... The first games they're really introduced to on iPads are like, you know, oh yeah, yeah, just Is it free? Yeah, okay, you can get it, no problem. And then it's, you know, jam full of ads and gems that they have to wait half an hour to before they regenerate again so they can keep playing the game. But man,
true.
What a great game. Apparently because after I talked about it with Noxie last week, he went on his podcast Filthy Casuals, and Tommy and Ben and him were talking about it. They're all playing it. I think they all just finished it in the last week, and they're going to do a spoiler episode. Maybe we can get on that somehow. But
yeah, definitely. It was just invading.
It was so much fun, and they're all loving it too. Like, it is just, it's a very sweet and cool, unique game. Tommy has been playing it on his iPad, and I think it's only $8 on iOS. So if you've enjoyed us talking about it.
Yeah, and I think it worked really well on iOS as well. Like,
yeah, so we played it on the TV with the Pro Controller, and there's a few moments like where you have to stop the glitch from breaking the text. Trying to do that with controllers was just like, well, I had to take it out of the dock and do it with the touchscreen instead.
Yeah, because I played on PC, and admittedly I was using my trackpad, and it was a nightmare to do that bit on trackpad. That's actually when you said I'd finished it, my first thought was, how did you get past that section on Switch? That would have been nuts. But nice to know that they put touchpad controls in as well. That makes perfect sense for that.
Yeah,
game.
Definitely. But yeah, I would recommend, if you have a good iPad, I think that is a great place to play this game. It's an awesome game. Play it however you can. It's good no matter what. But I think trying to play it with a controller, for the most part, it's great. But there are some moments where you have to be quick, and that can get pretty frustrating. A great one to play with kids too. It's genuinely funny. There's some great writing in it, and some very, very just like great gameplay ideas,
great,
but also story ideas too. Great, yeah. Except the female character. It's funny, like, they put so much effort in making the male character like this, you know, funny French, deep voiced French character. Like, I think we've both described it as French strong bad. And then the girl is just like this like random American girl voice.
Yeah, that was a bit
generic.
Odd,
she just sounds like a princess character in a video game, which kind of felt beside the point for me. But yeah, very great game across the board. I really, really enjoyed it. What games have you been playing?
Blue Fire.
We'll get into it. I don't know what you've been playing. I want to know.
Oh shit. Well, I've got a couple of games that I'm going to review. One of them is same as you, the Tiger Trio's Tasty Travels. Mm-hmm. I've also been having a taste of a new Devolver release that's come out in the last few weeks called Essays on Empathy,
okay.
Which is really interesting. For the most part, though, I mean, last time I was on an episode, I talked about how I've been wailing on Rogue Legacy.
Yep.
Because it's a game that, like, you can put down and pick up at the drop of a hat, and there's not a lot of... I've realized as well, there's not a lot of narrative demand, so I never feel like, oh, I just need one more minute for this cutscene to finish, or I'm picking the game back up and I've forgotten where I was up to in the story. As a dad treat, I picked up SnowRunner and all, like, both year one and year two season passes of DLC on Switch. And I've been wailing on that for the last couple of weeks, just because it's, like I said, there's no narrative. It's very easy to pick up and put down. It's also weirdly, like, calming to just kind of chug along in this big truck.
Yeah, so we should explain, because for anyone that hasn't been listening to the podcast since the start, I feel like the game Mud Runner and then its sequel Snow Runner has been like pretty consistently an in-joke on the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Since we started the podcast, it was a game you first played on your computer in which you play as a truck. Hold on, this is me just from secondhand knowledge. Let's see how well I can describe the game. You play a truck that has to drive... and do errands, but you have to drive through mud. And I guess you are upgrading your truck so you can drive through deeper mud throughout. Is that kind of what happens?
It's sort of. The first game, Mud Runner, is you have these levels that are like set deep in the Russian wilderness. And your job is to, like, you have a task, which is to deliver logs from a logging site to a lumber yard. The thing is, you're driving, like, horrendously muddy trails. You are driving these, like, kind of janky Russian trucks. The first game wasn't very complex, didn't offer a lot of, like, upgrades or anything like that. Way, way back, before it was called Mud Runner, it was called Spin Tires. And I probably could have reasonably talked about it on this podcast back then, because it was a little kind of cult indie breakout. And that's how it then became... Like, it got bought by a bigger company, turned into Mud Runner, which was the console release of it. And then Snow Runner is the sequel to it. This is, I think it's Focus Home Interactive, I think is the name of the, like, much, much bigger development and publishing studio that own it now. But SnowRunner is great because it kind of went like, well, people seem to enjoy doing this. How can we make the gameplay better? And sort of did this open world task-based approach to it. So it's no longer just simply like drive logs from point A to point B. It's now like, you need to pick up bricks and deliver them here, and then you need to rescue a stranded truck that's stuck in a river, and all these, like, there's a lot more variety to the tasks now. And like I said, it's very, like, it's not a fast-moving game, so it kind of has a, like, therapeutic, almost meditative quality to it as you, like, inch forward through, you know, wheel-deep mud. But at the same time, it has enough kind of like problem solving and having to make decisions and think about what you're doing that it's rewarding in that way as well. So, and I'll tell you what, over the last week, I've taken to, if I'm playing it with Olive in my arms, I'll narrate what I'm doing. So I'll sit there being like, and we're driving this truck up the hill, and oh, it looks like there's a lot of mud ahead. Maybe I'll need to get a scout truck to use as a tugboat kind of strategy to get through this. She falls asleep like every time that I talk through my boring,
I don't blame her. I was thinking the same thing.
Levins was nodding off as I was saying this.
Actually, I'll tell you what, just, I was doing. I was like, this guy loves this game so much. What a cool gift would it be if I buy John a Mud Runner t-shirt? Surely someone's made one. So I Google I Google Mud Runner t-shirt, and the first thing that comes up is a t-shirt that just says, I am useless and gay. And then no mention of the game anywhere in any of the other options. I was like, okay, maybe I'll try Mud Runner merch. And then the first thing that comes up is a t-shirt, a singlet that just says, come in me, bro. What is this weird? What game are you playing?
Is there some kind of subculture attracted to this game that I'm unaware
That's
of?
That's great. Into the subculture.
I'm a simple suburban dad that likes driving trucks around.
That's so great. No genuine SnowRunner or MudRunner merch at this point.
Yeah, it happens. But yeah, I mean, look, it's by no means a small game, but it's what I've been playing over the last week, and I think I have, like, pretty justifiable reasons for that. Like, my brain is so addled at the moment that simple things work for me. But it's been, like having Tasty Tigers, Tasty Trios, Tiger Trios, Tasty Travels, Travel, Tasty.
One day we'll get it right on the first attempt. At some point in this
four
episode.
T's, having the four T's to play, as well as a kind of having a bit of a taste of Essays on Empathy has been really good. Like, nice to kind of dip my toe back in. And I already know what small game. I think I'm going to be doing, like, one small game a week for the next while. And I know what I'll be doing next week. So tune in next week to hear my sole small game adventure for the week,
which is,
and I'll it's called an airport for aliens currently run by dogs.
Oh, I heard about this game,
or dog airport game, as the developer has started calling it, because he named it as a joke and got sick of saying the whole name. It's just released on Steam, and I think it's on Xbox as well. So that's what I'll be checking out over the next week. But that's the next week, Levins. Let's talk this week, man.
Why don't we talk 20 minutes ago, just before we started recording. I have been getting towards the end of Blue Fire, a game which I've talked about, yes, in the last few episodes of the podcast. I think I convinced both Jackson and Noxie to buy it. I've been describing it as a combination of Zelda, Hollow Knight, and Dark Souls. Specifically, like the 3D, like Nintendo 64 era Zelda games. It's a 3D platformer with combat, in which you're exploring this castle. You're getting upgrades, so it has Metroidvania elements that then allow you to traverse to new areas that you weren't able to when you first start the game. By the end of my playthrough, I had unlocked every single ability you could find in the game, and this includes my new favorite thing. Like, it's one thing to have a double jump. Like, I always look forward to getting the double jump ability in a Metroidvania game, but Ori and the Will of the Wisps was the first time I've ever played a game where you could get a charm that you could add to yourself that allowed you to do a triple jump, and I thought that was pretty nice. Groundbreaking, and I'm happy to put it out there that Blue Fire also has a unlockable triple jump ability too.
Sweet.
You're like, by the end of it, you can run on walls and you can do wall jumps. You can do a triple jump. You can hold down your attack button before you start jumping and then hold up like hold onto a spin attack, which then makes you go even further up. Then you can chain together two dashes and you can extend the dash depending on how many slots that you have. And it's really cool. All the systems that allow you to unlock more abilities and use more abilities at once, because it has like a charm system like Hollow Knight did. But you're equipping spirits, basically. But you can upgrade how many spirits you can equip at once by collecting hearts that you access in these voids that you find within the castle. And the voids are the very, very difficult platforming challenges. If you complete the void... and by doing this very difficult platforming challenge up this, 3D space that's, literally just floating in a void, that's how you get an extra heart. You start with four hearts. I think there's 16 of the voids so far. Sorry, 16 all up. And so you can end up finishing the game with 20 hearts. But within the voids, you have to collect these little, I think they're called soul orbs or some shit. And for every... the more you collect of them, you can then go see this dude, sell them to him, and he'll give you an extra slot to equip these upgrades. Very cool how all the systems play into each other. It's probably a confusing mess for everyone listening right now, but I got really, really into it. I got really hooked into so much to do with this game where I was like, oh, I know that if I do this, I'll be able to go unlock this. I completed all the side quests. I predicted with Jackson that I was going to get 92% of this game because I knew that those final few voids were going to be just way too difficult for me to muster. And I spent the majority of last week just absolutely stuck on the final boss. And not even like the boss fight as a whole. I could get all the way to the final of four phases of this boss fight without taking a single hit of damage. And then her final form was essentially, it turns into like, I guess this game's equivalent of like a bullet hell where you can't, there's like a grid moving around on the floor, and if the lasers hit you, it takes off like three hearts at once, and then she's always constantly firing things like bombs at you that take off like five hearts at once. There's just it, like, I can get there. I finished the game with 15 hearts at the end, so I still had five voids to complete. 86%, John, was my final score, because this morning after like so many times of trying to beat this queen, this big final boss. The worst thing about it, like, and this really became apparent, like, I loved my time with this game. I think it's a really, really special game. If you have love for any of the games I mentioned when describing it, Hollow Knight, the Dark Souls games, the 3D Nintendo 64 Zelda's Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time, I really think you should give this a go. It combines elements of those games really well. It's a very small team, Roby Studios, who I absolutely cannot wait for whatever their next game is. I think this is maybe a very ambitious game for them to try and tackle first. And the only part that really let the game down for me was the lack of quality of life. There's a few... for example, in this final boss, you have to access a chamber that's within a temple that's within the temple gardens. The save spot is in the temple gardens. So, die in the chamber, right? You get sent back to the temple gardens. You then have to spend 30 seconds running from one side of the temple gardens to the end. You get into the big cathedral, and then you run all the way, and then there's a loading screen, takes about 20 seconds. Run to the end of the cathedral, and then there's a loading screen, 20 seconds. Then you're in the chamber, you run to the middle of the chamber, and then there's a loading screen as the final boss fights with a skippable, thankfully, cutscene. So every time I died, and I was dying, it's like a 7-minute fight, I guess, and I was getting all the way to the final phase with, all my hearts, and then losing them all just because I'd get one bomb would hit me, I'd fall down, I'd touch the ground three times, get hit by the lasers, fall off the edge, and got hit by a final bomb and I'm dead. So, and then I have to spend 90 seconds getting back to fight the queen, then, the 5 to 6 minutes that it took to get back to the fourth phase only for me to die in 10 seconds again. It was very infuriating. So I was like, okay, I'll attempt it once or twice every day. And I hadn't attempted it since Friday. And just before we recorded today, I was like, I'm going to have one last run at this. And so I fired it up. And on my first run, I took it down, baby.
Hell yeah. Love to see a girl boss failing.
And look, I think the story is not why you want to play this game, so I don't really feel like I'm spoiling anything, but when you finally beat this boss, there's three lines of an alien language that come up on the screen. No explanation as to what she's saying. Then then it zooms out and you see a picture of the of the castle that you've been inside. Then the credits roll. Then it says, thank you for playing. So you don't really get much in the way of a reward for completing this game. So not the strongest ending, and especially when it's quite an infuriating process to get to the final part of it. But the middle, like, you know, the beginning part of this game, definitely can understand why people might drift off, because it is very frustrating as you learn the controls, and when you're very underpowered, you know, the game changes so much when you have that double jump, because you're able to string things together and you're way more sure of where you're going to land, that kind of thing. I love a double jump just because of the preciseness that allows you. You can do the distance with the first jump, and then the second jump allows you to, like, land exactly where you want it to land, you know?
Yeah, really aim it.
But when you don't have it, there's a lot of falling into green goop that takes off that takes damage away from you, and it has that crushing Hollow Knight thing where, like, if you die, you wake up with no money, and then you have to go and find your soul. You don't have to fight it like in Hollow Knight, but yeah, you have to go find it to get all your stuff back. I know that's a turn off for some people. I like that as a mechanic. I think it gives, like, death weight, but
yeah,
also don't make me... There should have been more checkpoints. Like, for example, I would have loved, once you discover the 16 voids that are scattered throughout the map, that they operate as save points, a la all the shrines in Breath of the Wild. Save points that you can, like, warp between.
Nope, that's true.
But yeah, look, I absolutely adored this game. I think it's a really, really special game. It's definitely going to be pretty high up on my best of the year list. Just on it for its sheer uniqueness and... like I said, it's a very ambitious game for a small team to do, but I think for the most part, they really, really, like, made something special with this game. Blue Fire, everybody.
Sweet. Congrats. Congrats on the finish. You're not gonna go back for that 100?
They're just, like, really, really difficult voids. So it's just, like, impossible platforming challenges. I'm really good at 2D platforming. Like, I think if it was a 2D platformer, yeah, I'm going back. I'll get that 100%. But 3D platforming, there is just, like... They're like, I'm not saying it's definitely my fault that the fuck up's happening, but I think it's really, really easy to lose control of your character and, like, and suddenly not be aware of, like, you know, where you're going to land or things like that, especially when you're having to clear massive gaps by chaining all of your abilities together at once.
Yeah. I get that. All right.
Yeah.
Well, 86% is nothing to be sniffed at, my boy.
Yeah, I'm just happy I beat that boss, man. It's just so infuriating.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, so Blue Fire is done. There Is No Game is done. And
sweet.
Look, we talk about Oink Games on the show a lot. Oink Games, one of my favorite board game developers and publishers. They're from Japan. We've spent a lot of the last year and a half talking about the physical Oink game releases, games like Nine Tiles and Deep Sea Adventure. I've collected well over 30 of them, almost their full roster of releases. They're these fantastic, beautifully designed little collections that you know you can fit in the palm of your hand. They're great for traveling, and there's so many great ideas. They look gorgeous. They're just very, very like. I feel like even the most cynical of people would understand why I'm addicted to collecting these things. Aesthetically, they're very beautiful. So I have got a few of them to talk about in a future episode, but we're not talking about the physical Oink games today. We're talking about a couple of, one, a collection of digital versions of their best-selling board games that they are bringing out to Nintendo Switch later this year. They've started a Kickstarter campaign. If you have not backed it yet, please go back it, because the more people back it, the more games they add to the collection, which is really cool. If you look up Oink Games Kickstarter, have you seen it, John?
I have not. I have not seen the Kickstarter itself. No.
So yeah, they're bringing like digital versions of Deep Sea Adventure and Startups. I think it is like one some of the no Insider. They're kind of their best selling board games. And they're making these beautiful looking digital versions of it. So they started a Kickstarter. They hit the 100% of their goal pretty quickly. But as soon as they hit 200, 300, 400, etc., every one of those milestones means they add another game to the collection. And at the moment, with like less than a week left, they haven't actually hit 200% yet. So if you love me, please, for the love of God, everyone, go and pledge your $20 or whatever to get this very cool collection of games. There's a whole bunch of physical rewards you can get alongside it. When this Kickstarter launched 2 weeks ago, it was a pretty great week, actually. Within 24 hours, the Oink Oink Games launched a Kickstarter for Nintendo Switch, and I would say I got 20 to 30 people, some people that I did know, others that I've never met before in my life, messaging me on various social media saying, "Dude, have you seen this? Dude, have you seen this?" I mean, little did they know that, yeah, I'd seen it, and I reckon I was one of the first 10 backers of the project.
Amazing.
But then that same day, or maybe the day after, we also got confirmation that one of John and my favorite TV shows of all time, The Venture Brothers, which was sadly announced to be canceled at the end of last year, is coming back for one movie on HBO Max. And so I had yet another 20 to 30 people messaging me about that one too. Like, "Oh, dude, did you see the news? I know you're a fan of this." And it is cool, like, knowing that people that I haven't necessarily written to me or spoken to me on anything, just but they just listen to me on podcasts and know that I love these things. And they're like, "Dude, you gotta don't miss out on this thing. I'm so happy for you. Hooray." It was a cool week.
Can you imagine if Oink Games announces like a licensed Venture Brothers board game?
Man, one day.
How many people would message you over that one?
Yeah, like the most niche thing ever. It's literally Levens, the board game.
You check your messages, like 200 new messages, and you're like, "What the fuck's going on? Oh, why?"
We did it. But the main Oink game release that I want to talk about is a video game that they put out on the Nintendo Switch. We've spoken about a couple of their video games in the past. Most notably, is it Hiroshi and
Takeshi?
Takeshi, that's the one.
Was that an Oink game?
Yeah, so they published that one.
Oh shit!
And was it called? Hiroshi and Takeshi. Takeshi and Hiroshi is what it's called. It was on Apple Arcade. It's also on Switch, and it was a very cute little game where you play an older brother whose sick little brother really wants to play the game that you're working on your laptop. And you have to make a game that is just difficult enough for him, but not too hard that he'll die, but not too boring that he'll, like, not too easy that he'll get bored. A very, very fun idea. I think, you play through it pretty quickly. But they've just put out a puzzle game on the Switch, and it's called Tiger Trio's Tasty Travels. They're very easy
to
say.
You've got it in front of you, don't you?
I do, yeah. I'm not sure I read it this time. and I think, having played all their video games, they have quite a few, including a few free ones on the App Store on iOS. I've played all their video games, and I think aesthetically it comes the closest in terms of their video games to what it's like to play an Oink board game. And for that, I would absolutely recommend Tiger Trio's Tasty Travels. Damn it. I I got a code. Oink Games finally recognized me, and they sent me a code 1 week after the game came out. So obviously, I'd already bought it myself by then. So I passed on the code to the great John Valenzuela. I wasn't sure, John.
Thank you so much for that.
I wasn't sure if you were going to have a chance to play it, but like it is so bite size. The early levels, anyway. Like you can fly through like the first 15 or so levels, and then goddamn, do you get stumped.
I'm up to the third stage so far. Yep. So the conceit of this game is you play a trio of tigers who have a sushi food truck. Mm-hmm. And every level is you kind of pulling up to a destination, and you have your truck will open up and a number of conveyor belts will come out of the truck. And you have to serve customers. And the customers will have specific requirements. So they might want... One customer might want a plate with... 3 pieces of green sushi. Another customer might want a plate with 1 piece of yellow sushi. However, the conveyor belt leading to the green sushi customer might have the yellow piece of sushi on it, and there might be 3 yellow pieces of sushi on that plate. And conversely, the conveyor belt leading to the yellow customer will have the green sushi on it, but it'll only be 1 piece. However, you can the brothers and more people that you bring on,
you recruit
each,
on the way.
Each stage
they,
kind
they,
of
they start as customers and then they end up as workers.
Yes, they end up working for you. So the tigers initially, what the tigers will do is you can one tiger will be able to switch plates between conveyor belts. Another of the tigers will be able to add a piece of sushi, and the final one can remove a piece of sushi. So your first kind of five or six levels are just dealing with like problems that you can solve using just those tools. When you hit the next stage, I think it adds in
a gorilla
who can transfer stuff based on the color of the sushi. So instead of just having a generic every plate transfers, it can be like, okay, only green sushi will transfer across from this conveyor belt. Then I think the following one you can do number-based or conditional number-based transfers. So like only plates with 1 piece of sushi will be switched across kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
And the
so
staff each... member that helps that can only move 1 piece is a rabbit. I think the second one is like 2 pieces is like a panda or something like that. And then the third piece is an elephant.
Yeah.
And they are all so and goddamn cute. Like I would buy toys of every single character in this game.
I noticed the rabbit transfers the plate by picking it up with its ears.
Yep.
And then kind of flopping it across. It's an immensely cute game.
The animation is gorgeous. Like I love the way that there's like, I guess it looks like someone's colored them in with pencils, and the pencils kind of animate in a way like the actual pencil work itself moves differently at a different pace of the, like, I don't know. It's very fluid. It almost mimics what fur looks like, except it's pencil. It looks so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm adding it to the kind of list of games I have where it's like, it looks like a children's book come to life.
Yes, absolutely.
Which design wise is high praise. And it's like, whenever you successfully finish a level, all the characters on the level will start dancing. Which is just great payoff. Like, I think in particular, I love the gorilla. The gorilla starts breakdancing, and every time I finish a level, I look immediately at the gorilla, and I'm like, go, dude, yeah!
But even the way you get to each level, like, yeah, like, the trio pulls up in their truck, and then the conveyor belt, like, it opens up, and then the conveyor belts shoot out, and then everything just looks so good in this game.
It's I thought it was the case when I saw the trailer for it, and getting to play it, I was like, fuck yes, it's a programming game.
Yep.
Like this is a game that teaches you the logic of coding, and I love games like this. I really like this. I think is maybe my favorite I've come across so far, because it's both really kid friendly, I reckon. Mm-hmm. Like I would love to see Archie play this game.
So we started playing it last week. And I was like, okay, Archie, stop playing it. And he was like, what? Why? I'm like, because we need to show your mother that games can be educational.
Amazing.
And I'm like, look, there, it's programming. He's coding, but with sushi.
So not only is it, like, I think really kid-friendly, because the complexity curve on this is so well-tuned. Mm-hmm. Like, each level adding on that new kind of element to it just teaches you how to use it so well that if you get bogged down, it's not because it's incomprehensible. It's because you're not looking at the problem the right way.
Yeah, like you're overthinking
it. I ran into a level today that was like, I was like, there are three different things, and the person in the middle, like the three different conveyor belts, the left and right side don't want anything. The middle wants like three of each.
This is the one
each.
That stumped me too.
Yeah, and I'm trying all those things, and it has that's the other thing. When you start a level, sometimes there can be instructions hard coded into the level that you can't get rid of. So for this one, like the left hand side, there was a move a single sushi plate across thing. So I'm planning all my stuff around like, okay, if I delete sushi, then I'll get rid of one and I can add another bit of sushi back, but that'll take this out, doing all this stuff, failing every time, failing again and again and again. And then I had that, like, it's one of the reasons I love this game, that beautiful moment of epiphany where I'm like, hold on, if I just used color-coded, like, switch things to get everything into the middle and then pull the stuff that I don't need out, and boom, I solved it in like 10 seconds after that. Yep. I'd figured it all out, solved it. Each level, you have like, there is a goal to use sort of the fewest amount of instructions possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so far for every level I've played, I've done it minus one where I was one over. So I need to, you know, I think when I either finish it or get a bit further, I'll go back and refine that level.
I mean, you know the kind of kid I'm raising, so we had to go back and fix it up straight away.
Nice. But yeah, I'm like, the soundtrack is really fun.
So good. We were humming it all the way to school this morning. It's such a joy of a game.
Yeah. It's I'm loving it. I'm really having fun with this.
So there's nine worlds, and each world has six levels. Okay. And I don't know if there's extra stuff you unlock after finishing the main nine, but this is it's just such a joy. I can't imagine it'll overstay its welcome either. Like it's great. You know, you can certainly the first few levels of each world you can burn through pretty quickly. Like you could probably do three or four levels in 10 minutes until you get stumped, and then you just like then you think on it for the rest of the day until you can get back to the game and finish it.
Yeah, this is. I mean, ages ago on the pod, I talked about a game called Atomichef.
Yes,
and I remember saying at the time, like, I think Archie will love this game one day. This is the gateway game to him really to him playing Atomichef, I reckon, because it's built on very similar principles. Atomichef just like Atomichef, you build the actual process of making the food. It's not just serving the food, but playing this game, I was like, this is like a sort of cutesified version of Atomichef, and it was just all the same things that I loved in Atomichef, I'm loving in this game.
Yeah, I'm obsessed, man. It's so great. It's so well made. It's the perfect kind of game that you want to play with someone else in the room with you, because they don't necessarily have to play it with you, but they're going to be like, oh, put the green thing there and then make him eat one and then send them to the middle. Like it's a great passenger seat game to play as well.
Definitely. And even though I was saying earlier it's very kid friendly, it's perfect for adults as well.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Me, 38-year-old man, loving the shit out of this game.
Yeah, and if you're worried that we're just we've been kid pilled and that's the reason we like these games,
dad pilled.
Tommy Dassolo from Filthy Casuals spoke about it on Filthy Casuals last week after I recommended it to him too, and he loves this game too. This is an absolutely killer puzzle game, and I just want every success for Oink Games. I just think they're such a great company. And I want to see them have a big success so they can keep putting more of their games on the Switch and putting, you know, expanding their team to make more great experiences like this. I just think they really understand what makes a game fun to play, what makes a game appealing to outsiders as well. I think, like, you know, on a purely aesthetic level, this is just such an appealing game.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, after playing like Blue Fire, which has like a lot of charm, but is definitely an ugly game, and then going to this, which is like this like Technicolor, beautiful, fluid, but simple puzzle game. Yeah, it's just this is one of the great puzzle games of the year, I think.
Excellent. It's only, yeah, I think this is definitely This has got a GOT wireless shot, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely. It's only available on Switch at the moment. Maybe they'll bring it to other platforms. But if you have a Switch, and I'm sure most of you do, definitely try this one out. It's a killer puzzle game. And just charming as hell.
So going from something that is only available on Switch to something that is only available on PC, I believe. I can double check that. But so Devolver Digital, massive. We're both massive fans of this publisher. Generally, I think I have a perception of Devolver as releasing these kind of like action-packed, wacky, kind of funny, kind of like sometimes kind of crass sort of games. Definitely very arcadey in style. But with the release of Essays on Empathy, I was reminded that no, they kind of do have a bit of an artsy side to them as well.
I remember Gree. So, Gree was published by them.
Gree, that's true. Gree was published by them. So Essays on Empathy is by a group, a three-person development team in Spain called Deconstruct Team. Deconstruct Team, you might recognize the name. They've released two commercial games previously. The first one is called Gods Will Be Watching. And then the second one is called The Red Strings Club.
Oh, yep. That's nice. Yep.
Gods Will Be Watching is... I've played a little bit of it. It's like a kind of point-and-click adventure game that just puts you in these insanely harrowing situations and you need to make kind of moral decisions to determine how these scenes play out. I made it up to a scene that was like... It's this sci-fi story. You're a guy who's infiltrating a kind of terrorist organization. The scene I couldn't get past, partially because it was difficult and the sort of experimentation to get through it was sort of tough to pass out. But the other reason was because it was just too hectic. It's like a torture scene where you kind of decide how you're tortured.
Jesus.
And it's just, and you know, it's like they're threatening, like, they threaten to shoot your friend and or like they're, you know, putting a power drill through your kneecap and you need to decide, like, can you tough it out or can you maintain secrecy? And just really kind of harrowing to play through. Red Strings Club is a very sort of, I think it's like a cyberpunk kind of detective sort of thing. I've played a bit of that as well. It's got a really kind of interesting bartending minigame and a pottery minigame attached to it. So they're a studio that definitely looks at narrative game experiences and kind of how to break the mold on how to tell a story and how to get a player to interact with the scenario that they put in. Essays on Empathy is... I find it really, really interesting because it's the first instance I've seen in video games of what I would describe as almost like a rarities and B-sides album. So Essays on Empathy is a collection of 10 games... very, very small games, sometimes fairly short games, that they have produced over the years for a variety of game jams. Mainly, there is like one or two games in there that they're like, we made this as a birthday present for a friend kind of thing. I think a lot of these games are available on like itch.io.
Right.
But this is the first time they've been collected together into this sort of like compilation.
And are they all the same devs or...?
Yeah, oh, wow. all the same dev team. They have included, so 9 of them are from previous sort of game jams and efforts. They have made one entirely new game for this. I've not yet sampled all the games. Like 10 deep narrative games is a bit of a big ask for a man with a, you know, 1 month old baby, but I have definitely sampled a few of them. I was playing the newest one they've done. It's called, it's a Spanish name. It's called like De Tres. Oh, wait, no, hold on. I've got it here. I thought I had it here. I've got the name. It is De Tres al Cuarto.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. It's a game about two stand-up comedians and it's a deck building game. So it's centered around 10 performances that you and your partner do. And you have you will be presented with like a hand of cards that you can blank, which is where, because their comedy is all about back and forth repartee. So you've got blank, which is where you fuck up the joke and the joke ends. You've got pour, I think it's called, which is where you like do a kind of half-assed punchline to end the joke. You can build, which is where you riff off your partner and, like, increase your potential. Like, each interaction builds a kind of combo meter. So build will kind of nudge it up again. And then you got punchline, which is where you finish the joke and you can kind of collect inspiration points, which you then use in between performances to either buy new cards or upgrade your cards, ensuring that you kind of have a better performance the next time. It's a really interesting take on, like, the deck building genre being used for, like, really narrative kind of purposes. And then in between each of your performances, you have, like, a conversation with... You watch a conversation between these two comedy partners. And there's a very cool kind of narrative thing they have in there, which is, like, as the conversation is happening, there's a little sidebar that is kind of the thoughts that the, like... It will bring up thoughts that the characters are having related to the scene. So they might be having this, like, funny back and forth about how one of the comedy team is dealing weed. And then it'll flash up, like, you know, that comedy partner doesn't really appreciate the fact that the other one thinks of him as a dealer, but he doesn't want to fuck up the partnership, so he's just rolling with it kind of thing. Like, really interesting sort of, like, having this kind of subtitles for what the people are thinking. So that was a really interesting experience. I played another one called Behind Every Great One, which is this narrative game where it's a husband and wife. The husband is, like, a famous artist, and the wife is just a housewife who doesn't really have any passions or any hobbies. You play as the wife, and it's all about how, like, it's a game about, like, how the situation you're in gives you anxiety because you feel like you're being judged. Like, the gameplay loop is each day you can perform a set number of tasks. So you might be able to, like, prepare dinner, wash the dishes in the sink, clean the toilet, and iron clothes. And then at the end of the day, each end of the day involves you having dinner with your husband. And your husband might be like, "Oh, it was really dusty in the living room today. Like, did you get a chance to clean it?" And you're like, "No, sorry, I didn't get a chance to take care of that." "Oh, okay. Oh, the plants in the hallway are looking a little dry. Like, you know, they need to be watered." And it's like, "Oh shit, I forgot that today. I'll get to it tomorrow." So you never actually are able to finish all the jobs that you need to do. And then, like, his parents come over to say, and his mum's a bitch and, like, is picky about everything. And then your sister gets kicked out of her apartment and comes to stay with you. And so this woman just has all this anxiety piled on, like, on top of her. And there are times where, like, you can't perform any tasks. You just have to go to a room that doesn't have anybody in it and cry, essentially. And once you cry, like, it changes the color of the screen back to normal and you can go back to doing your tasks. It's like, they're never physically abusive or abuse the woman in any real way, shape, or form. But it kind of, like, it really brings out, playing the game really brings out the helplessness of this woman's situation. And there are there's, like, a fantastic little detail in the gameplay where as you become more anxious, the little scenes that you're in start to slowly wiggle back and forth, like rock like a boat at sea. And it just gives you this really kind of nauseous, anxious feeling that mirrors what this woman must be feeling. As I said, there's 10 games in this collection. There's so many that I still want to check out. There's, like, one game about a woman who realizes that the skeleton that's inside her isn't her skeleton. So you, like, steal an x-ray machine and go to the countryside to kind of learn about yourself a little bit more. There's a game about an assassin or a hitman who's recuperating in a flower shop. And so it's all kind of about, like, flower arranging and you know, sending a message with various bouquets. The very first game in the collection is actually, like, kind of a Metroidvania. It's from, like, 2014. The story is, like, you work for, like, this outer space mining company and you get drunk on the last night of a dig, and when you wake up, the company has abandoned you. So you need to, like, go down into the mines and mine enough resources to build your own rocket ship off this planet. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's, like, they use the term Metroidvania. This podcast has definitely taught me to be a little bit more circumspect about when that term is applied.
I think we're not in the same room anymore. Like, I won't hit you.
Yeah, I think it's more of a puzzle platformer with like some equipment elements to it. But yeah, this is like it's each of these games as well comes with a gallery from the development of the game and also a short video of the development team kind of talking about the game, almost like a director's commentary sort of thing. It's really nicely put together as well. Yeah, I think it's just some of the games, like obviously because they were made for game jams, they're not highly polished games. And there were definitely one, like there's one I played, it's called Engelaster's January 2021, in case anyone's picking this up and will play it. But it's sort of like, it's got a bit of an open worldy element to it that has like you have a truck you need to drive around, and the truck driving mechanic is dog shit. But it's one of those things
never,
where it's
you
like
you can never mud run in this truck.
No, definitely snow run, mud run, not a chance. But it's just one of those
come
things
in me,
where it's
bro.
Like I'm. What was the other one? I'm depressed and gay or something. I'm useless and gay. It's one of the, like, playing it, I was like, driving this truck is driving me fucking insane, but I understand it's a game jam game. It's not supposed to be a truck driving game. It's supposed to be a narrative game. I'll accept that. It really, all of the games kind of really, you know, they have, some of them have, like, weird sci-fi settings and that kind of stuff, but they're all really just about, like, exploring the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that the Deconstruct team, like, that's definitely one of the focuses they have when it comes to making video games, is it's not about spectacle, it's not about fast action, it's about what does it mean to be human, what does it mean to be alive, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, straight off the bat, like, 10 games for the price of maybe $20 to $30, that's bang for your buck right there, baby.
Yeah, this sounds like immense. It sounds like there's so much content to go through here.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm looking at some of them. Like, some of them became the basis for, like, Red Strings Club.
Right.
I know there's definitely one game in here that features a character from Red Strings Club, and obviously they're just built in it from there. But, yeah, this is something that I can continue diving into for quite a while, I think. There's so much content in this. And I just think it's like I said, this is the first time I've seen a game company go, like, oh, all the kind of little experimental stuff we did, here it is packaged up in one kind of nice thing. So you can play through chronologically and see how
we grew,
our craft, yeah, and our approach to making games has developed.
That's great. Very cool and unique. That's awesome.
Yeah. Essays on Empathy, published by Devolver Digital, developed by Deconstruct Team. I believe it is only out on PC at the moment, but you can get it through Steam, through itch.io, through Humble Bundle, or through good old game, GOG. Check it out if you, like me, are a narrative junkie when it comes to games.
The opposite of me. Red String, whatever it was, that came everywhere. So hopefully yes, they bring this to all other consoles too.
That came in me, bro. hopefully, this is definitely, I hope, something that they bring out to... A Switch release for this would be fantastic. And I think, you know, with Devolver being the publishers, they'll definitely make time to kind of, you know, get this ported to various different systems.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, those are all the games that we've been playing in the last week or weeks when it comes to John. I've already started a game as well that I'll be talking about next week. It just Ooh, came out. Job. It's called Wonder Boy Asher in Monster World. It is another... Yes. Revisited old Master System Wonder Boy game. I believe so anyway. But I've talked about a few Wonder Boy games on the podcast in the past, and this is the latest one that just came out, published by In Games. It looks gorgeous. It's a very fun platformer. So I'll be talking about that in great length next week. And of course, John will be talking about the Airport Dog game.
Yep.
We all know and love it. There's a lot of new releases, or a few very good notable new releases coming out in the next week. If you like weird first person indie games, there's two very good ones, or very very big high profile ones. Sludge Life, the Devolver Digital game that was made by some of the guys that also made Disc Room. John reviewed it on the podcast late last year.
And it actually wound up on my Game of the Year list last year. I think number 7 or 8.
That is coming
super, super excited for it. Definitely cop it. It's really fun and
that's
weird.
On the Switch. Comes out on the 2nd of June. And then 3 days after that, a game that I know a lot of our listeners have been very excited to come to the Switch. That is Umurangi Generation. First-person photography game, I believe it is.
Yep.
So that comes out on the 5th of June.
There's another first-person game coming out as well in that early June, like first week of June period. The second release by the AMC, the channel behind like Breaking Bad and stuff.
Oh, really?
They have a games publishing arm now, and the second game from them. The first game was like an airplane like. I guess flight simulator, but you're not a pilot, you're a passenger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like real time sitting in an airplane seat. You can watch stuff on your entertainment unit. You can put your tray table up and down and that kind of shit. The second game they've got coming out is called The Magnificent Truffle Pigs. And it's a game where you play a guy with a metal detector. And people have been kind of comparing it a lot to Firewatch, because it's you in conversation with someone over a radio who's kind of telling you like where to go and check out things. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to Magnificent Truffle Pigs. It looks great.
Awesome. And then finally, a game that I can't remember if you've actually reviewed this on the podcast or not, but Griftlands is coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch on the 4th of June. It's the game made by Clay, best known for like Don't Starve and... Shank, do they make Shake? They make Shank.
Shank, yeah. Yep, hell yeah. Love Shank. Don't Starve, Shank, Oxygen Not Included, Mark of the Ninja.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, Clay are a rock solid developer. They've just, like, been putting out great stuff for years now.
So, yeah, Griftlands has been, I mean, it's been out on PC for, like, 2 years, I guess, but never released officially. Yeah. It's been, like, in an alpha release.
Yeah, so they must have gone 1.0 if they're coming to console.
The official launch is, I think it comes out on PC officially on the 1st of June, and then 3 days later it comes to consoles. So pretty cool. I think it's like a card game roguelike, or is it just a card game? I don't know. I know nothing about it.
I think it's just a card game. Like, it's a lot more kind of narrative based. It's a lot more narrative based. Like, you won't, it's not like Slay the Spire where you get far and then you die and you go back. I think it's like, if you fail an encounter, it either changes the direction of the story, or maybe you can come back and try that again.
Yeah, great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's plenty of great games coming out. Again, you could also just play, let's try one more time, Tiger Trio's Tasty Travels. Yes, said it without even
Nailed
reading
it.
I did it. I did it. Finally, we made it, everybody. You can definitely go back and check that one out. It's so, so much fun. And if you got the chutzpah to do it, check out Blue Fire. Try and beat that queen faster than I did. I think I beat the game with 86 completion in 19 hours. So it's a much bigger small game than the ones we normally talk about. Hey, thanks so much to everyone for listening. John, good to have you back. And
great to be back.
We'll be back again next week, unless John has another mysterious baby. A second one.
How was this baby mysterious? The first one.
No, as in like...
We've known it's been coming...
But the second one, if you suddenly got a baby in a week, that'd be mysterious.
Oh, I'd be terrified if
that happened. Bro, I'd never call your daughter mysterious, okay?
Thanks.
If you want to find the show, you can at facebook.com/allthesmallgames. We're on Twitter at allthesmallgame. Individually, we are at levdog for me and at 16tacos for John on Twitter and Instagram. Come and say hello. We love hearing from you. And we have a Patreon if you want to support the podcast too. Patreon.com/allthesmallgames. John, we are overdue for doing an episode all about the Stanley Parable.
We are.
If you are able to record this week... Potentially, because this conversation can happen off mic, but I like to keep things spicy. Do you think we could try and do that this week?
We can definitely record this week.
Okay, unreal. Well, hopefully that'll come to you by the end of the week. So look forward to that. It's $5 a month to join our Discord community, and I had an idea for an additional bit of Patreon only content we could do as well to see, maybe sweeten that Patreon deal. So big news on that front very soon. Come and join us, join our Discord, talk about indie games all day with the fam over at patreon.com/allthesmallgames. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.